and welcome to episode 253 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the Instagram comic Black, and joining me this week, the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the butter to our peanut, it's Tony Esmond.
Oh, I wonder where you're going with that.
What do you think? What do you think?
It said butter to my pea, and where's
did
it going?
You think it was a Last Tango in Paris kind of moment? No.
You can't talk about that, can you? That's bad. That's not good, is it?
And already the show has gone off the rails. But don't worry, because we're going to be back on track and talking about worse. Comics from this moment on. Yeah, it wouldn't mean it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get better because we've got a fantastic guest this week.
I said close up brown eye later on. In the future.
Do you know what? I'm just going to start editing you out.
Close up brown eye from the future.
Will you stop saying it?
Stop saying it?
I don't want to be that guy. You're making me be that guy.
You're already that guy.
Not by choice.
Where are we going with this? I don't like where this is going.
My whole life, I was the immature one. And then I started this, and what has happened to me? I'm still immature, but I just have to babysit these two. Anyway, we've got another week of fantastic comic book chatter as we sport. Does someone else want to take over?
No, you do. You're doing all right. Go with it. Go wrong with it. Come on.
You're doing a much better job than me and Tony Gebber could. So.
Yeah, we tried once.
It's true. There was that one week where I wasn't there and spectacular.
Yeah.
we were joined by a creator of Frank at Home on the Farm and the writer behind the hugely successful Quarantine comic, which is on Kickstarter at the moment, Jordan Thomas. And he talked about all things comics with us. Like Kickstarters, horror, working with that many artists on one project and what it was like. So it's a fantastic chat. That's coming up in the future. Do you know what's coming up next?
Comic House.
It's our sponsorship ad. Comic House. God bless them. They are our sponsor and the indie comic marketplace with a difference. You may hear them mentioned a couple of times later in the show as well, thanks to Dan Butcher. But if you go to comichouse.com, you'll see a huge selection of titles on the database, like hard copies and printed books. If you self-publish, it's another avenue to get your work out there. List your book on there for free, start selling straight away. They've also got the app, which is amazing. I've got a growing to read list. I'm looking forward to just churning through some awesome books on there soon. It's basically like Netflix for comics. Subscription service for only £3 a month, and you get access to a huge library of digital indie comics, some of which we've talked about on the show, some of which we will talk about on the show, and some of which we haven't even discovered yet.
It's nice to see a sort of fresh top 10 and loads of new books on there. I like it when it's sort of swapping around and changing. And there's a couple of new Marvo's back in the top, is in the top 10 net, I just noticed. Nice one.
Oh, is it? Nice one.
What else is on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got the aforementioned El Marvo, issue one by Ben Ereton, Luke Condor, and me. We've got Silicon Heart by Sam Rhodes. Diversions, issue one, Moon. NCC Anthology, volume four, Slings and Arrows. Black Deer, Realm of Owls, Logical Collections, and Rona, issue one. There's a ton of stuff.
Yeah, there's loads of stuff on there.
Talking about Moon and Silicon Heart later in this very show. Stay tuned.
Hashtag spoilers. that's to look forward to. So if you go to comichouse.com, you can find out more. There's a 14-day free trial, and I believe the code STAYSAFE gets you another month free.
Months, yeah. I believe that code is still active.
That code is still active. unless you're listening to this in 2310, and you're one of the alien overlords that evaporated Earth. I don't know how you found this signal, but...
imagine it's more like criminal psychologists tracing back.
How did it begin with Tony? Let's find out a bit more about Tony and his terrible, terrible murders.
I mean, I don't think they have to trace that far back, to be honest.
Well, that's my addiction to unicorn porn.
Uniporn?
Grumpy porn. That is why I get the big bucks.
And that's why I struggle every week to keep this show going. But but check out our sponsor. And yeah, we've got a bunch of shout-outs to tell you in a minute. While these two are chuckling at their own humour for the next hour or so, check out this interview with, Jordan Thomas. There you go.
Check it out.
Right then, folks. This week, we are very pleased to be joined by the writer of Frank at Home on the Farm and the upcoming new book that is tearing up social media as we speak. It's called Quarantine. It looks amazing. And we're joined by its writer and creator, Jordan Thomas. Hello, sir.
Hello, everybody. How are we doing?
Good, man. Good. Yeah, good. Yeah. In quarantine, obviously, so it's very on subject.
Yes.
Okay, you guys can all get together and, like, sit next to each other, huddled over one microphone.
Yeah. We're all in, like, a plastic tent.
I'm like John Travolta with the boy in the bubble. Yeah. How did he crack one out in that bubble?
I don't get that reference. What's that film?
Yeah, Boy in the Bubble, John Travolta. He couldn't be outside in the real world because his immune system was so bad. I think it's like a TV movie or something that was quite famous.
He is literally a boy in the bubble. The title really nails the whole lot of concept, really.
I'm going to say you don't need to see it now, Dan. I'll be honest with you.
I wasn't interested initially, but when you said that, I was fair enough. Don't need to explore that.
Nobody gets their face kicked in and there's no human interest in it. So, to be fair, it bored me as well. I've got to be honest with you.
And there's absolutely no body horror. It's nothing like the book we're about to talk about. Because, as we say, quarantine. I mean, I'm sure that a lot of our lovely listeners have heard about this, pledged about it. It looks bloody amazing, as I said, and we wanted to know a little bit more about it. And it's come about in the strangest of times, in the strangest of ways, and it's filled with just a murderer's row of fantastic artists. But for those people who don't know what this book is, Jordan, do you want to take it away?
Yeah, sure. So in terms of what you're getting with it, it's one story, but with 28 different artists, or 27 in the book, and then a cover by Derek Robertson. It's different artists on every page, and it's a crazy kind of sci-fi story, some body horror in there, as you guys alluded to, about a family whose apartment block just one day, they just get told there's something wrong in the building and they're going to be quarantined. So they get a zap, and next thing they know, they're in an alternate universe, kind of floating around in space, kept in their apartments by these guard bot robots that prowl around the halls. And yeah, we kind of see what happens when a family is locked inside their apartment for several weeks. So I guess...
There was a point during that synopsis that I was like, this is fairly... it's a comic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, fairly high normal. Concept. And then zap, they're floating in space. And it's like, pardon, what?
That's one of the things comics are good for, aren't they?
Yeah.
Exactly that.
Yeah. I mean, the question remains is, was this planned before, during, or after? You know, is it, that if you planned it before, then this, everything that's happened in the world, you must be some kind of wizard or equally worried about, you know, the world colliding in on you.
I think if it was planned before, then I'd be a bit anxious about the finger of blame starting to point towards me. Something untoward to do with it all. It was pretty much just I was sat around looking on Twitter, as you do when you've not got much else going on. And I saw quite a lot of the different artists that I follow on there passing back and forth some pages. Like, some of the guys were being like, okay, if I was employed to do Doctor Strange, this is what my Doctor Strange page would look like. What about you guys? Who's your favorite character? What would your page look like? So I thought, okay, so obviously a lot of the guys have got projects on, but there's a bit more time on everybody's hands. And maybe a good way to pull all this together would be a kind of drawing club type thing, but why not actually get something to come out of it at the end of it? So I thought I'd get in touch with everybody and see who was interested in coming on board, but I wanted to approach them with a pitch, with some kind of story idea, as opposed to just being like, all right, lads, do you want to just draw a comic? And when I was trying to think of what would be interesting, it was pretty obvious, like, what I was thinking about. I'm in Spain, so I've been in lockdown for a little bit longer than a lot of you guys in the UK. And we've had this quite hardcore lockdown where only in the last few days have we been allowed to even go for a casual walk. So, so the quarantine idea was the thing that immediately kept coming into my head and wouldn't go away when I was trying to think of what to write about. And I wasn't really interested in doing anything to do with viruses. That's a little bit too on the nose, I think, at the moment with everything going on. So it's very much focused on just the idea of being forcefully kept kind of all together in a small space.
With that, I mean, obviously, when you're writing it and creating it, you have that in mind to keep it very different. You know, like you say, no viruses and stuff. But, you know, with the name Quarantine, have you had any responses in terms of, you know, when it comes to marketing or putting the word out there, have you had anything in the, dare I say, negative, sort of saying, oh, are you trying to, you know, profit off this, blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, are you a pandemic profiteer?
Yeah.
That's definitely something I considered a bit when I was thinking, oh, do I really want to do this as the idea? But the best ideas I tend to have for the writing are the things that come most naturally. And having been pretty much just inside for the previous couple of weeks and knowing I was going to be inside for the foreseeable future, like, it was the natural kind of thing to go with. So in the end, I thought, okay, I'll take the risk and hope that I don't get too much blowback from everything.
I mean, a lot of people, though, don't look into it, do they? Because when I first, like, saw the idea and the Kickstarter pop up on social media, I first thought, Quarantine, this is interesting. I saw the list of art, you know, people involved, and I thought, oh, it's going to be like an art book or something like that, you know. So I clicked on the link, and then as soon as I read it was then, oh, this is something completely, you know, different and unexpected, and, you know, a complete story. So so it didn't take long. I don't think I read the whole page before I pledged or something.
I think I saw Gustavo's art and pledged, I think, is the way I went with it. But the other thing I suppose you have to think about, Jordan, is the searchability for it. So quarantine has gone from being a word that was just sort of occasionally used to being a word that's used in sort of every 10th tweet or something, I suppose. I suppose that's another, from a sort of marketing point of view. Did you think about that? What did you come up with around that?
That's probably something I should have thought about more.
Right. Okay.
Totally honest.
No, fair enough. Yeah.
I guess I'm definitely more of a writer first than a marketing specialist.
Yeah.
So now, like, I'm not even
the too. That's how we should be. You know,
if you type quarantine into Kickstarter, I'm not even the top hit. You type it into Google, bloody hell. But so I'm just kind of hoping that enough people see it, like, because like you see, kind of in our world, I guess, as much as it would be great if everybody who likes comics were taking in stuff on Kickstarter and paying a bit more attention to the small press world, that would be wonderful. But I think there's a large chunk of people who just don't really pay attention to Kickstarter anyway, like, who are probably just buying, you know, X-Men or whatever every week. Not that I've got a problem with X-Men, especially not at the moment with Hickman writing it, but I guess it's just, hopefully all of the people in our world who like this kind of stuff, they're going to see those artists, they're going to know at least two or three names. And like you've said, with Gustavo or Russell Mark Olson, or Emma Kubert, Donna A. Black, Benjamin Philby, like, so many amazing people on there. So I guess I was just hoping that people would see a name that they trusted and take a look and go from there, really.
With an anthology of a kind that you've got here, or a collection, however you call it, you've got, not only when you've got like 20 artists, you've got 20 little fan bases as well. It's quite nice to have. It's a nice little benefit of people who will be working for you to put the word out there as well, you know. Which is always good, I think. It's a community thing.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. And I think as well, just in general, you say about the community thing, there's so many people that they've got, like, not a stake in these guys, but people like yourselves who are friendly with a lot of these people, and you want to see them do well and you want to see them succeed. And you really see the way, you know, everything I put out there, you guys are retweeting, or Leonard Sultana's retweeting, or whoever else, you know, that's worked as a writer on a book with one of these guys. So
you're on the lakes. You're on the lakes recently as well, is that right?
Yeah. It's on the lakes because you've got Pete Taylor in there.
Yeah, he's a friend of ours.
And then all the writers that have worked with the guys before on the different projects as well. You know, they're all posting stuff up on the old Kickstarter campaigns on the updates. So, yeah, hopefully by the end of it, at least everybody who would be interested hopefully will have seen that it exists, so they can at least make a choice.
Yeah, yeah. And even those people who sort of casually dip in and out of Kickstarter, you don't see everything. I mean, I had a couple of, I used to just look at it occasionally if, you know, Vince or Dan mentions a book to me. But I mean, I'm fairly entrenched in it now, but you get a lot of people who are like that, and they kind of, sometimes they need a little poke to push them towards it, I think. And I think the thing is with Kickstarter, certainly that I've experienced in the last few that I've been involved in, is you get a great uptake in the first 2-3 days. You get a great hit rate on the last few days. It's that middle period where you're sort of fighting to get the name out there, I think.
Stags.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's what having that community involvement is important, I think, you know.
Yeah, I usually see stuff like this when it comes across my timeline on social media where other people have backed it or talking about it. Yeah. Rarely do I go on Kickstarter. Let's have a look at what comic projects are on there.
No, I never do, because there's so much tosh on there, to be fair. That's
there's really a lot.
Yeah.
I see old Todd McFarlane's done well at the moment with his Spawn action figure.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so what was that?
I'm glad it's there to help these people out, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's done like just a Spawn action figure and kickstarted it. That's it.
Okay. Like a traditional one and a different version of it and stuff like that, I think, yeah.
Because his old Todd toys were fucking doing gangbusters anyway, weren't they?
Yeah.
That was millions of quid's worth, that one, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah.
So why is he doing a what?
I don't know.
It's just
some kind of general hatred he has towards people.
Hatred is a good driver, Jordan. I use it often.
Yeah,
it can be quite useful. Yeah.
He popped up on a live stream talking to some industry pros, and he was like, "You should be using this time to get back up and pencils up and start drawing and creating again." I feel like you should be doing that. Like. Say for us as a creator, and I was like told by my company that we're not going to put out books, you're not going to get any work. I'm like, right, fuck it, I'm going to make my own book. I'm going to go on Kickstarter, Indiegogo, whatever, and just start creating a book. It might be a bit of an uphill battle, but rather than just sit there thinking, oh fuck, what's going to happen?
Many of these guys that are like big artists, big writers on all of the major books out there. They must have all these ideas that they want to do, but you've got to be there
writing the issue of X Force. Yeah, I know a number of artists who've started a project and then it's stopped and the company have decided against it and stuff like that. There's loads of stuff out there, I think, like that.
I do find with that sometimes, though, you do, with the bigger name artists, sometimes the prices on the pledge levels aren't really fair, some would say. You know, even if they're fantastic artists, it's almost like, because they're a pro, they think they can charge more because people will pay for it.
And I also think they think you'll wait longer. I have to say, I've never waited longer than I have with pro people on Kickstarter. With the sort of, you know, the small press indie fan stuff, it tends to get in your inbox quite quickly.
Yeah.
But naming no names, I've been waiting 2 years for one at the moment, you know. A favourite creator of mine. It almost puts me off them sometimes.
Yeah, I've been there.
What if they take it on as like a kind of a side gig and then they get other work, and before you know it, that's been pushed back. Yeah, it's one of those things, if you don't tackle it, it goes longer and longer, gets worse and worse.
Yeah, and you see, I'm working on Hawkman at the moment. I'm thinking, I've just paid you $50 for a book that I haven't had.
Yeah.
That's that giveaway there.
Yeah.
On who you're angry at.
To be fair, I made Hawkman up, but there's a Hawkman connection. There is a Hawkman connection.
Rob Liefeld did that to his lot, didn't he?
Let's not talk about him right now.
He's always trolling. His career's just trolling people, isn't it?
Yeah,
seeing how,
I think so.
Yeah. Right. Which means he'll probably like reboot his comic Troll at some point.
That's the classic. Going for £7 in the South Bank comic market at the moment.
What?
Yeah. You know, there's a little bookstall outside of the BFI on the South Bank.
And yeah, it's fucking ridiculous.
The copies of Troll are £7 in that box, just for the tourists, you know.
I've seen books here, and you pick it up, and it's like five times what you'd expect to pay for it. That's right.
Yeah.
The thing with it is, though, with the... like you're talking about with the pros doing Kickstarter, like the money that they raise, you're meant to be raising money so that you can go off and take the time to do it.
Yeah.
Like that's surely the idea is to like when I'm raising money, well, normally I've kind of got stuff ready in advance a bit and I've just taken the risk of paying the artist ahead of time so I can get the book to people quite quickly.
Yeah.
But in general, you're just paying to give you the opportunity to do it, like not to just get like a bunch of money to sit in your bank for exactly. 2 years whilst you work on the other stuff at the same time. Like, it kind of goes against the whole.
Or maybe here's something that might happen. Maybe one day is you're a really popular writer in TVs, novels, and comics, and then you can't pay your tax bill. So you do an Indiegogo or a GoFundMe.
Tony, you're just firing at everyone this week, aren't you?
Yeah. This is going to be the lawsuit episode. Yeah.
Salt shaker out.
I've got
out.
Todd McFarlane coming after you all.
Tony, just in case anyone's wondering.
Strafing across the comic industry.
That was Peter David.
Yeah, it's Peter David, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Did Dan Slott do something similar? Or is that, am I barking up the wrong tree with that?
Lancelot blocked me years ago. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Lancelot probably claimed that maybe it was like Jim Lee or someone who took over his mind and then acted as him. Then afterwards would claim that it wasn't really him that did it.
Saying that, I had a lovely conversation with him at London Super Comic Con, and his missus bought me a cup of coffee. So there you go.
Oh, there you go.
I'm sure he's. I've never met him. I'm sure he's very nice. I just wanted to reference the. Yeah. The only one of his comics I've ever read.
Yeah. If you say you was a kind of a bigger name and you're doing a Kickstarter and you want a kind of better wage, surely you would still say, well, I'm charging $5 for the comic, not I'm charging $15 for the comic. And you do your price limit range accordingly. And if it hits that number, you do the comic. If it doesn't, you don't. Mm. Do you know what I mean? But charging like two or three times the cover price and what other people are charging is, I wouldn't have thought that's the way to go about it.
Yeah, that's not what Kickstarter's for, is it? Basically.
No. Mm. It's supposed to be kind of this leg up on your business, isn't it? To get you going.
Yeah. Pre-order system. It may as well be a pre-order to pre-order the comic. It shouldn't be a system where you pre-order the comic and you pay for his tax bill from 2 years ago. Do you know, it's not that. Yeah.
Tax bill thing's really bothered you.
Yeah, it's really got
I mean, you're no stranger to Kickstarter, are you, Jordan? Because obviously Frank at Home on the Farm. Was all of that on Kickstarter, or was it the first few issues?
I did all four of those on Kickstarter, with the final one finishing up like 6 weeks ago, eight weeks ago. So I just sent out all the digital rewards. I should have been flying back over to England to post out all the stuff in the next week or two, but
lazy, mate. You're just lazy.
How did you find, I mean, we've talked about this a couple of times on the show, when you do a Kickstarter that's individual issues, did you find there was a slight drop off, or as more people got into the series, did things pick up? How did the four different campaigns differ?
Yeah, there was definitely a slight drop off, because number three was actually like the lowest amount of backers that I got out of all four. Which I guess when you've been doing it can feel a little bit disheartening if you're like, it's going really well, and then even if it's been successful, you're still a bit like, like 40 less people than last time.
But that's better than a major company drop-off. They reckon the drop-off in at Marvel or DC after a first issue is 50% sometimes. You know, so that's pretty good when you think about it.
I guess I hadn't really thought about it like that. I think issue three finished.
Yeah, issue threes are a weird, you know, it's like the third album, isn't it? It's a weird number because, especially, I guess, if it's a four-issue series, you might have those people going, I'll wait until the fourth Kickstarter and then I can get them all at once. You know what I mean?
I guess
with the issue three, I just felt a bit like, you're like, oh, it's four issues. And if someone's already brought two, you think you'd carry on. But
did that waver your confidence a little bit then when it sort of dipped?
Not really the confidence exactly, because it still got funded fairly easily. Like, it's a bit disappointing, but overall, like, people are very positive about the book, and everyone's very nice with what they say about it. So,
and then it picked up again for the fourth one.
Yeah, the fourth one was massive compared to the other ones. Like,
any reason you can pinpoint for that? And
100%, it's because people could come and buy all four in one go.
Okay, right.
I sold loads of the four issues in.
Did you get a change in like people pimping it? Was there a different, you know, was there something that you could put your finger on and say there was a, you know, we appeared on a certain website or something like that? Or
I got the Project We Love.
Oh, you did? Thing. Okay, right.
That was the only issue that got that. And I think that makes quite a big difference, because you're just on that main page like constantly. And what I noticed was, you know, you get on the dashboard. Sorry, this is very inside baseball for anyone who doesn't.
People love that.
You get, like, you can see how many people are following the comic on the dashboard. Yes. And the number of followers I had on it when I got that the one with the Project We Love on it was about three times as much as what I'd ever had before. There was like 250 people following it as opposed to like 80 to 100 on the other ones.
Oh, wow.
And I guess there are a lot of the people who kind of come in at the end. And just in the last like 3 days, there was just tons of people all coming in to buy all four, because that's not really going to be people who already bought the first three, because they're probably going to buy it or they're not. That was all, I think, people who were new to it. And so that's why it did so well, I think, was because I sold so many of those all four issue kind of catch up bundles.
And it's that's the beauty of indie comics as well. People will always discover something is always new, isn't it? You know, it may be your issue four and you may have had a long journey of doing it, but always remember that someone hasn't read your comic before. And when they're introduced to it, all of a sudden they've got four issues that then they can just jump into, which a lot of people want to. I mean, I've seen projects where I've been at conventions and just be like, where has this comic been all my life? I'll have that one, and that one, please. You know, because we love I think comic buyers, yes, we like a fantastic single issue, but there's something nice about picking up a couple of issues to just read back to back. The binge reading.
No. Yeah, I think as well, coming a bit back to what Tony was saying about people delivering on stuff. Not that people don't necessarily deliver, but there's a lot of projects out there where, and it's not this, you know, the platform's there to it. I'm lucky in that I never ended up married or knocking anyone up, so I don't have to. I put my spare money goes towards myself, so I can afford to pay Clark a little bit beforehand. Yeah. But a lot of the time, people have to. They can afford to get maybe three pages done to do the Kickstarter. And then once they've got the money, which doesn't clear till about 2 weeks after the project finishes, they can then pay the artist to do the rest of the book. So maybe you buy a book on Kickstarter and you actually don't receive it till about 5 or 6 months after the campaign's finished. And if that's a 4 or 5 issue series working like that, you could be, I guess, waiting 3 or 4 years to read the whole of just an arc.
Yeah.
Of a comic, so maybe people feel a bit safer just diving in for all four issues.
Yeah, I think you're right, and that's something we're very careful about with Atomic Hercules. Not that we get any money from it, to be fair, but we do that with Atomic Hercules. We almost wanted a 2 month and the next issue is out kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what I tried to do with Frank. I tried to as close to an actual comic in the shops as I could manage it, really.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's always a good thing, because we're pre-programmed to read comics like that, aren't we? That's the thing. You wait too long, you forget about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like, I mean, back to like Clark though. Clark Bint's artwork on Frank at Home on
the farm, it's great, man.
How did that? That's.
Did you collect him when he got released from prison, or is it just?
Because it's stunning stuff. Like it sort of reminds me a little bit of Jason Burroughs that did the original Crossed. Issues, do you remember? That sort of star to him, you know, which is, I mean, that's probably a disservice, like comparing him to someone else, because there's a beautiful sort of, there's detail and he can draw some grisly stuff. You're not afraid of some grisly stuff with your writing, are you, Jordan?
I guess
do you need to talk about it? Do you have trouble sleeping at night?
You can point where the pig touched you on the I don't know. It's really weird as well. The way that I originally came up with the story for Frank. Have you seen those Richard Linklater films, like Before Sunset, Before Sunrise? They're like this romance between a guy and a girl, and they meet, and you kind of spend 24 hours with them. But in the first one of those, they're like in Belgium or something like that, and they meet a guy on a bridge, and he's like, "Oh, will you come to my play later on today?" In it, I play a cow sat at a table reading the paper and having a coffee. And that's literally that gave me pretty much the full story. I scribbled it down on two sides of A4 at about 4 a.m. or something. So I was in my weird uni staying up till the sun came up kind of time.
Literally looking at a page of a pig sat at a table with a speech bubble next to him. So I'm sure was that one of the first sort of scenes you thought of?
Yeah, pretty much just this idea of these animals like being kind of monstrous, but also quite human at the same time. And just such a weird film, like a kind of a romantic drama to give me the idea for something that's pretty far from that. There's not really a lot of romance in Frank. to be honest. I think a few of those animals are up to some business at night, but besides that, I think that's about as much as you get.
Yeah, it didn't really scream of romance, really.
Yeah, Clark's absolutely incredible, like the work he did. And I mean, he was fantastic. There's some pages at the beginning of the first issue, and he worked completely chronologically through the issues that are fantastic, that I love. But by the fourth issue, some of that stuff, I don't know if you guys have seen through the whole thing yet, but there's a spread at the beginning of issue four where he looks out the window that's just phenomenal. When he sent that through to me, I couldn't believe it.
The spread that sort of I was just about to say a bunch of words that would be a spoiler then, one of the final spreads is absolutely stunning. It's a spread in many
pictures,
terms of the word.
Pictures with some flashback behind it.
How can I say it? I think Frank's story, the climax of Frank's arc.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I tell you what, I mean, obviously you've got the darkness of the story, and there's lots of crazy stuff going on, which we love in comics. But there's a lot of animals, and like genuine animals. These aren't like cartoon
animals.
There's very much, but you want an artist who can. It's almost photorealistic, isn't it? The animals need to look and feel like they would, because otherwise, I guess with this sort of story, if it was too cartoonish, if it was too overlandish, it might draw people out. How did you? At what point did sort of the artist sort of say, right, here's some animals, and you thought, oh, thank God, he can draw animals, because they're very difficult. I mean, they're a nightmare. Anyone who's tried to draw a cow, knows it's a fucking nightmare.
Well, horses are the one, aren't they? When I was speaking to Gary Erskine about doing his page for Quarantine, he was like, all right, I'll do it, but no crowd scenes, no horses. So, oh,
really?
You're not going to do crowd horses
page. What do you say? Do you say, Gary, listen, I'm the writer, mate. Don't fuck about.
Down, Gary, you know. I'll send you back to 2000 AD if you keep on like that.
Yeah, he wishes. Yeah.
Yeah, but how do you sort of describe stuff for the artist then? Because Quarantine, you're working with 20 plus artists. Was there any consideration to speaking in different ways to different artists, or was it just a flat script just sent out to everyone and say, you've got this page?
So I kind of had a little team of guys that I went to first with the idea. Because that was people like Russell, Gustavo, Ian Laurie, who actually he had to drop out of doing a page in the book, but he's done a pin-up now. Okay. Those kind of guys that you all see on Twitter, because I kind of thought if I get those guys on board, then it'll be easy to get other people, because, you know, it's going to be a quality project with these kind of people working on it. And then, I kind of gave them the story and asked for their opinion. They were all very happy with it. And then I got Russell to do character designs so that people had a clear design for what they wanted, for how it was going to look in the book. And then I did debate for doing the pages whether I wanted to do a bit of like an FA Cup kind of lottery draw. Like I could film it, stick everybody in one hat with the page numbers in the other. It'd be quite entertaining. But then I thought probably potential for the quality of the book to suffer if you've got people not kind of on pages that are going to make the most of their talent. So in the end, I just decided to assign the pages. And I set up a Slack channel. Yep. It's like a messaging platform. You can share art and stuff really easily, and any files, scripts, things like that. Yep. So everybody's just been throwing their roughs in, throwing their pencils in, throwing their inks in as they've been going along. So everybody can see Pete's drawn the son's bedroom, I can see what Pete's done for that, so he's the first one that's done that, so that's kind of how that's going to work now.
Of incentivizing each other, the artists, when they see other people posting, they're like, oh, I better do mine and pull their finger out.
I did a similar thing with the Hall Chronicles. We had a little group and people were like, oh, you could clearly see people are up in their game because of what other people were doing.
Oh, that's great.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think because they want to impress each other, and there's got to be a little bit of competition amongst everybody as well to be like, all right, okay, because I could you see, like, you guys, you saw Clark's page that I shared with you in the folder. Which is absolutely mad. And then you get Craig Patton's page coming in a couple of days later, and you can see that Craig's been like, all right, Clark, if you're gonna bring the detail game, I can bring the detail game as well.
Yeah.
As we said, Martin Simpson's page, like, I'm just a big fan of his work. It's just that's amazing. Good.
It stands out so beautifully as well. Like, everybody's done amazing stuff in the book, but when there's a couple of people who've got very unique styles out of all the artists, and just his design of
he did showed book. Like a screenshot of like his Photoshop, and he had like 100 plus layers working with it, which
really
I don't know how his machine can cope with that, because it's got when you work in Photoshop, it gives you like a file size down the bottom left hand corner how big it is, and if mine starts creeping up to a gig, like, fucking hell, like, I'm saving virtually after everything I'm doing because I don't want my computer to crash. Lord knows how how large the file size was on Martin's work.
Yeah
you
must have a decent
mad computer.
You got Shaky Kane in there as well.
Yes, we do have Shaky. Shaky is an absolutely lovely man.
He is, isn't he? Mm. Yeah, we've had him on the show. Have a listen to the episode we had him on. He was fucking brilliant.
Cool.
Yeah, he did. He almost told me where he throws his artwork away, because I was going to go and burgle his.
Tony's going to go down there. Yeah.
Look in his dustbin. But yeah.
Yeah, I was just talking to him about whether we could sell his original page, and he was saying, like, it's so kind of a mixture of all over the place stuff. I'd feel bad if someone got it as a reward. Like, you've got really no idea how much people like your stuff. I'm sure if it was just a bunch of napkins that you'd scribbled the panels on, people would be pretty happy. But yeah, he's such a nice guy. And I'd never spoken with him before. I kind of know him for a friend who put me in touch with him. But we've been kind of back and forth for a bit. But I was talking to my mate, being like, oh, yeah, I've been getting along really well with Michael. He's such a nice guy. He even said, like, I asked him if he'd be up for maybe doing something in the future, and he's like, oh yeah, I'd love to do like a full comic with you, that'd be really cool. So we're like best mates now. And about an hour later, I got the file transferred across to me, and it said, hi Jason, I hope this is all right for you. that's what you get for thinking thinking you're big time.
So was it a bit of a juggling act trying to get all the people to get their artwork in, or you just kind of gave people a brief and away they went? You weren't chasing people, because imagine if you got one artist and you're chasing them to kind of see how they're getting along. When you got like 20-30, that becomes a bit more of a logistical
especially when there's a timetable on this, because you're already on Kickstarter, aren't you, and it's also called quarantine, so you don't want it to come out this time next year. It's going to be
I mean, Boris has given it a good old crack at.
Apparently it's just been stuck on for another 3 weeks, and it just about similar.
I'm like the only person here hoping that the lockdown keeps going. I'm like, no, my marketing plan is all around. Hang on.
Oh, I don't know, mate. I quite like it. I quite like sitting here reading comics every day. I don't have to meet mouth breathers in London.
It's the thing you can't say to anybody, isn't it, that you're quite happy with it.
I've
been reading loads of stuff. Obviously, I've bloody made a whole comic in the couple of weeks and stuff that it's been going on, and getting other bits for other comics done and stuff. And then your friends who like to do things like go outside and socialize, they're like, oh, this is awful, like, I can't wait to get out. And you're trying to sympathize with them, but you're secretly thinking, I could do another couple of months, I reckon.
No
problem.
I mean, you turned this, like, the script around, the idea, fairly quickly, and, like, you know, it's going to be a beautiful book, but, you know, you've almost, this one's almost on the home stretch, shall we say, the art's coming in, but your script is done and it's dusted, obviously it's got to be lettered, but what is the next thing after this thing? Because as a creator, there's always some kind of embryo of an idea for the next thing, isn't there? Because this came up so suddenly. So I'm sure that you had other ideas of the follow-up to, you know, whatever your follow-up to Frank was going to be. So, you know, have you got ideas for the next thing?
I thought that question was going the direction of us. So you knock this script together in a couple of days, and I'm sure it's going to look great, but admit it, the script's a bit shit, isn't it? I thought that was the way that was coming.
Nah. We don't throw shade unless you're Rob Liefeld. You're not Rob Liefeld.
I had another comic that's about halfway through being done at the moment called Mugshots, which is my kind of crack at doing my version of Criminal, kind of a English set. That's one of my favourite series, Brubaker and Phillips.
Great stuff in this series.
So, and I've always loved crime stuff, and obviously Frank was very deep in the kind of the darkness and the horror and mystery kind of side. And then we've got some sci-fi with Quarantine, and so the next one's going to be this crime book that's kind of set up a bit like a Criminal setting, in that the first one's just a one shot and then it's finished. But if I do more, then I'll probably have it within the same world, maybe with characters appearing as background characters in other characters' stories and stuff like that. But I'm doing it with a mate of mine. We've been friends. We were like best friends at secondary school, and he's ridiculously talented, but he normally works, he does novel cover illustrations. He's doing some work for a Sesame Street show at the moment. So he's all over the place, but he can do like full on photorealistic stuff. If you go to Who Needs Style Anyway, on Tumblr, you can see stuff like Garth from Wayne's World that looks like a photo. But in the, you can do lots of different styles. So it's a much more cartoony style in the comic we're working on. But he basically just messaged me saying, so I've pretty much not drawn anything that I've enjoyed for about 8 years now, like working for clients and stuff. And I've seen all the stuff you've been doing with your comic, and it'd be, I'd really like to have a go at something like that. So if you've got anything that I could do, then that'd be great. And rather than kind of sticking in with something that I wrote like 6 years ago that's all dusty or whatever, I decided to write him something new. And that's and kind of, I was like, what do you want it kind of to be about? What type of thing? And he was like, okay, it can be about absolutely anything. I don't care. Whatever you've got. And I'm like, okay, what about this?
I mean, that's a dangerous answer though, isn't it? It's like, what do you want for Christmas? Just get me anything. No, tell me what you want.
No, it's a trap. especially when the missus says that. If the missus says that, in trouble. Yeah. Oh, I don't really want anything this year.
As soon as I started,
I'm just going to say,
so I realized he did have an idea of what he wanted to do, because he was very quickly kiboshing things when I was like, okay, what about this? But nope, too many characters.
So, all right, Diva, calm down. You said that to him.
So we settled on the crime one, which I'm very happy about. But and also it's nice in that he doesn't want me to pay him. So that's nice.
Winner. Yeah.
Do you send me his email?
Were you both into comics when you were at school then, or is it just you that has a sort of comics like background?
I was the one that was into comics, but he was always crazy into art. So all of his textbooks, everything, were just covered front back covers in his scribblings, his doodles and stuff. And he used to be, I remember him really upsetting the art teachers a few times, pointing out what was wrong with all their work and showing that he was already a bit better than them at like 14. He's a bit nicer now, to be honest. But, he's a bit hard to work as a teenager. So he was really into art. So he used to kind of pick up my comics and stuff when he'd come around the house. And I don't think he was reading them. He's never been too fussed with the reading part. But right. I remember that was around the time that like Hush was coming out with Jim Lee, stuff like that. So yeah, he used to look at all of that stuff, and yeah, he's always just been a bit of an art fanatic.
Oh, nice. Cool.
So what is your origin story with comics then? What's influenced you over the years?
So when I was really young, I remember I lived around Brighton, and they always had quite a few comic and action figure shops and stuff around there. And I used to go with my dad at the weekends, and we used to get a lot of the trading cards. You know, those like the collectible.
Yeah. Well, like the superhero ones or?
Yeah, everything. I've got folders and folders of like mad stuff. Like sometimes
you've still got them?
Well, my mum has.
Spare room. Yeah, I've still got quite a few folders. Even the stuff like the Star Trek ones and that sort of thing I've got as well, you know.
I've got baseball ones. I've never watched a game of baseball.
Okay. Yeah.
No idea why I have those. I've got the card set, the full card set of the Tank Girl movie.
Oh, classic.
Wow.
Absolute classic. So the thing is, if you ever need to send a kid through college, they'll completely won't allow you. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, completely won't.
I can't imagine too many people having them.
Yeah. And there's some random stuff in there. And I guess, yeah, I used to get all the superhero ones. And so I kind of knew who all the superheroes were without ever having read any comics. And it was probably not until I was around 11 or 12 that I started to actually read stuff. I remember the first thing that I put on my pull list, like actually going in and getting it every time it came out, was 1602, the Neil Gaiman and Andy Kubert. Randomly, we've got Emma Kubert working on the Quarantine comic. She's the daughter of Andy, so that's kind of full circle.
Yeah, I think I follow her on Instagram. She's a good artist.
Yeah, she's really good. Her colours and stuff are beautiful. Like, yeah, she's got a really nice style. I kind of was hinting at her about whether Andy fancied doing a page as well, but she's kind of backed that away pretty thoroughly. So, well, you're Adam, Adam, your uncle, maybe? But no, you're not.
Mind you, having the granddaughter of Joe Kubert on your comic is not a bad thing, man. Fucking hell.
Yeah, definitely. She won't let me credit her as that, to be honest. She was
granddaughter of Joe Kubert.
She wasn't a fan, but yeah.
But yeah, I can understand that though, because like you want to make it on your own merits, don't you? It's not like
And I asked her onto the book without having any idea. Like, I'd probably just sound like an idiot, but I saw her stuff and thought it was really nice and sent her a message asking her if she wanted to be on the comic. And it was only when she said yes and gave me her email address and I saw it was Emma at the Kubert School. And I was like, oh, wait a minute, this is a bit funny.
Oh, right, yeah.
And asked her. Yeah, before that, I didn't know. So, yeah, she's totally there just on the merit of how good her work is.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, yeah.
I'm an absolute comics obsessive. I've been buying like omnibus collections like mad during this lockdown. It's like I've got another way to go out and spend money on anything. And I used to buy loads of CDs and
DVDs. You get into the books and the big collections, though, it's that shelf porn.
The other day I just bought the first omnibus of Lucifer, like the proper Vertigo Lucifer series.
And it covers
is the first 35 issues, which
35?
Is I think yeah 35 issues, but that's originally series, these man. Were the ones collected in the first five trade paperbacks, which are the only five trade paperbacks of Lucifer I have. So I've just completely rebought everything.
Welcome to my world, my friend. Yeah.
That's mad.
But why actually try and find some comics in a long box? You know, move 20 boxes out of the way when you can just order the omnibus from Amazon.
That's kind of how it works. Full Why the Last Man the other day, and I've got all that in issues, but I was like, oh, look at that omnibus. Look how sexy that is. Yeah. That.
I've done that loads of times. Like, got like the individual issues. Oh, fuck it, let's just get the trade.
Yeah.
Because, like, digging through fucking boxes to read comics, I'd prefer to grab the trade off the shelf.
A lot can be said for omnibuses, though. I mean, because I used, you know, they used to be, like, when I was a kid, things like that were, I'll never be able to afford something like that, you know, when you don't have a proper job and things like that. But then when, they're brilliant now, I'm not saying I buy them all the time, because they can be pricey fuckers, especially if you want a nice hardcover, which, there's nothing nicer than that. But if there's a series that you've always wanted to check out but never really got round to, and all of a sudden it's had 40 issues and it's done, look, there's an omnibus from it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And it's, to be fair, as you well know, I've got my fair number of hardbacks, but there's some of them that are so big. I'm just looking now. I've got the first volume of The Mighty Thor in a Marvel omnibus. It's so big, it would like pressure my balls until they burst if I read it. If I read it in bed. Yeah.
Like, you have to get into a special position on your bed to read them. That's why The Last Man one's got all 60 issues in it. It's far too big. It's completely impractical. I'm never going to be able to read it.
I've got one of those Taschen books, you know, like I think it's the history of DC Comics. And it's like that thing, the theme tune. It's like that thing out of Little Britain where the geezer's tiny and he gets handed a biscuit. You know, it's like that. Someone's handing me a book and I'm like a sort of tiny person, you know.
They're not cheap either. Like, they're quite expensive, a lot of these things. And especially now that I'm paying artists to draw my comics, I'm a bit like, you know, at the end of Schindler's List, when he's looking at his car and looking at his ring and being like, oh, this is one person. I'm looking at my omnibuses a bit like that now. It's been like, oh, that's a page of a comic book I could have paid someone to do.
Yeah, it's true. As soon as you start creating your own comics and like paying artists or whatever collaborator you've got, that becomes a thing, doesn't it? That becomes, you know, you can't...
Yeah, it does. Certainly does.
Very much.
Yeah. Yeah. And wait till you get into the artist editions. That's another, that's just a big hole that you throw your money down.
Yeah, I've not gone there yet. Although that that Mazzucchelli Born Again one.
I've been reading that this week for an upcoming episode, and an amazing book, man. Yeah,
I think that's my favourite comic story, like a superhero story ever, that one. And I only read it like a year ago, so to still be that amazing when so much stuff has popped years later. From it, you know? Like you've seen it all. It's a bit like I watched The Matrix the other day with someone who'd never seen it before, and it looks not that great now because it was the first one and everything. Effects have improved and stuff, so you can't get that hit of special when it came out. But to read Born Again and still be like, that's probably the best.
I tell you what I missed from a comic reading experience for the Essentials. They were great, you know, just black and white phone directories of comics that cost like a tenner. And you could, you know,
they don't cost a tenner now.
They don't, no, not in the back issue, not in the trying to buy a eBay. But they were a great thing just to have.
I've got a bunch of those by my bed. I've got the first couple of Claremont X-Men's.
Yeah.
I've got the first Spider-Man one. A few fantastic ones. Yeah, they're really good.
The we've often talked, haven't we, Vince, about the Tomb of Dracula ones. You know, they're amazing to read in black and white, you know.
I ended up getting those purely because of a Comixology sale, wasn't it? Because I always wanted them
and could never
afford them or find them like properly. And then Comixology had one of their ridiculous sales, and I picked up that and Werewolf by Night. That's another one that I've
That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one.
So you sound like you love your Marvel stuff, but as well as Vertigo. I mean, I can see Vertigo in your writing. I can definitely see that influence.
Maybe Avatar. Yeah, there's a little bit of Avatar there as well, man. Yeah.
With all the blue creatures in the jungle.
What, you mean Fern Gully?
Is that what they have, like, I've never seen the movie Avatar. Do they stick their willies in each other's backs or something?
I think that might be a parody, maybe.
To be fair, though,
when
if
he
that happened,
that market.
Tony, have you seriously not seen Avatar?
No. Oh. I haven't seen Titanic.
You're not missing much.
I've not seen it.
Titanic. I've seen Harry Potter. There's loads of new movies. I don't like
it. Anyone seen Avatar?
No.
I've seen Avatar.
I can hear everyone saying it happened. I've not.
Am I the only person who's watched Avatar?
Not in the world.
It's like the highest grossing film of all time, isn't it?
Yeah. One thing about Avatar, it's made no cultural impact whatsoever.
You know,
like you get big sci-fi films that kind of people always talking about, or kind of the ideas are infused, but that has nothing.
It's a bit like this podcast, really.
Yeah. Well, it has kind of like poured heaps of abuse and scorn on us.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's deeply affected our lives.
Yeah.
I can't leave the house anymore.
That's because you boffed one of your neighbours, probably. Is that it?
Oh, God. Anyway, we were talking about comics that people read. Jordan, obviously, you know, there's the Daredevils and stuff, but what are there any other sort of books, like when you discovered the indie scene, what did you find there?
I was definitely a big Vertigo guy, like you said. Some of the more indie stuff I've really enjoyed. I mean, a lot of stuff from the guys that are on the Quarantine comic, to be honest, like part of why I've asked them is because I love their stuff. Like Gustavo's Peruvian cyberpunk trilogy stuff was all great. Obviously, anything Russell does is always amazing as well. I like some of the stuff. One of the best things I've read from kind of the small press world recently was called The Junction by Norm. I'm not sure how to pronounce his second name. He's a really nice guy, but yeah, I thought that was fantastic.
A few weeks ago, I reviewed that a bit.
Coraline mixed with
Twilight Zone. That was a very successful Kickstarter as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was really good. I really like that. There's another one actually called Necropolitan. Have you heard of that one?
It sounds like an ice cream, and so I'm all about it.
It's set like in hell, but hell's turned into all these kind of gangs. So you've got like Nero and his group on one side, you've got Capone and his people, and it's a bit like a feudal Japan kind of system in hell, with all these crazy people kind of leading them. And I remember especially the second issue of that I loved. I've been waiting for the third one of those. That's really good as well.
I mean, when you say something like that, that can only exist in comics, isn't it? It's the sort of thing where they want to do it in other mediums, you know, because I think that's a great idea. But it really, comics are where ideas like that flourish.
Yeah,
it'd
end up on the Sci-Fi Channel and it'll be shit.
Yeah, I guess comics works amazing for anything that needs a massive budget but is too weird or messed up to ever get it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, because like you can make whatever movie you want with whatever budget you want, and well, as long as the artist can draw it.
Yeah.
when you write a script, you do have to think about what the artist is going to draw, don't you? Really?
Yeah.
I think.
What's the do you come across any comics people out in Spain, Jordan? Or
I did for an anthology, the Cadavers World Gone to Hell anthology from Mad Robot Comics. I wrote for a couple of years ago, and this was random actually, but I found a couple of guys on ArtStation, and it wasn't specifically that they were Spanish, but yeah, two guys from Spain I worked with there. But in Granada, there's loads of comic book shops. There's far too many.
Oh, is there? Oh, that's good.
Possibly be able to support. You'd need so many people buying comics to keep all these shops going. But there's some really nice ones. But what's it? Jorge Jimenez? Is that his name?
Yeah.
The Justice League guys. He's from Granada. One of the shops has got a bunch of his original art and stuff in. And I believe that they do have a comic convention each year, which I can never track down online to find out where or when it is. But one year I am going to find out that information and get to go. But yeah. I don't know. I'm not very good at
what sort of the sort of comics they have. Do they have a mixture of English language and Spanish original books, or
it's pretty much all Spanish in the shops. Everything's translated. Like, I mean, they've got all the same stuff as anywhere, but it's all translated into Spanish. Yeah.
I was in Spain in February and they had a lot of Punisher. Seems very popular in the sort of gas station shops and stuff like that. You know, there were sort of translations of that and Deadpool, and you could pick stuff like that quite easy. Yeah. I think. Yeah.
I guess they're not that far out of a fascist regime, are they? So there's probably a bit of hangover for Punisher's approach to justice.
Yeah. Are there any original Spanish characters that we might not have heard of that you've picked up since? I'll take it are you getting to be fluent in Spanish, or were you fluent in Spanish? Or
fluent would be very, very kind. Right. Can have a chat, like if I'm in a bar or something like that.
Yeah,
I can chat with people, and I know the words for most things, but I always imagine that I just sound like the kind of dumbest 4-year-old in the class whenever I speak to people. So I can get my point across, but I'm probably saying it in a really terrible way. But I haven't really made any comic book friends here. So this is why all the podcasts that you guys do, why I've been massively into your one, Tony.
Thank you, mate.
I never iron anything one, because it kind of feels like getting to hang out with some comic book friends and hear people chat about comics, which I just don't have here.
Like, I mean, do you ever come over to Thought Bubble, for example, or anything like that? Or
I've been to a couple of the MCMs in the last year. But I had fun. I met John Romita. I met Frank Quitely, who's like my favourite artist ever, and he was the nicest guy. I had like 15-minute chat with him and a photo. I tried to get him to do a cover, and he was like, maybe not. Very nice guy. I'd really like to. And now that I've got Frank complete, and once I've kind of got it as a collection as well, like, I think that's quite a nice thing to take to sell at these kind of shows. So probably next year, if stuff gets back to normal a bit, I definitely want to go to a couple of the bigger ones.
Thought Bubble's the one, man. I'm desperate for it to happen this year. We have
True
the best.
Believers, I hear a lot of positives about True Believers,
man. Love True Believers.
And the Lakes. Lakes
is great. Yeah, love the Lakes. Yeah. Love the guys up there. Yeah, it's a lovely place to go to as well. It's a really sort of social one, the Lakes as well. Which is good.
Yeah. And I need to get everyone together off the comic for a big party or something next year once it's all done. Try and grab everybody together.
Yeah, because you've got a lot of the
scrawl. Eric wants to fly over.
You got some of the scrawl lords at it as well, haven't you? So, and they're big fans of the Lakes as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I need to choose a spot where we can do a kind of a delayed launch party together or something.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
What a party that would be. Bloody hell.
Yeah.
I mean, once you sort of dip your toes into the indie comics community, you don't go back then, do you, really?
It's fairly welcoming, isn't it?
Yeah. So, and I can totally see your work just going down a storm at like Thought Bubble and all the lakes or things like that. And like you say, like Frank at Home on the Farm, obviously you've just, you know, you're delivering the fourth issue now, but I guess there's plans in the future for a collection, of course. But your immediate plans are obviously quarantine and getting that and delivering that. And we've been privy to some of the artwork on display. And seriously, folks, if you've pledged this, you're in for an absolute flippin' treat.
Yeah.
But how is the sort of... is it all on schedule? All cooking with gas?
Yeah, I guess because everybody only had to do one page. Mm. I was pretty hopeful of having it all finished by the time the Kickstarter finished. So the end of May was like my deadline for everybody. And I've got like 13 finished pages now, and then about another 10 that are in process, and then I'm just waiting on a couple of people who I knew weren't going to be able to start until about mid-May just to do theirs. But I think once they get going, normally you see the page turns around in like a week. You get the rough maybe on Sunday night, you'll see pencils on Tuesday, and then it's finished by the following Sunday kind of thing. So yeah, I've got no real worries about that. Plus, like the final issue of Frank, my final stretch goal was me and Clark getting together to sign all the issues,
right?
Which obviously has absolutely nailed us with this for being able to deliver it. Whereas with quarantine, cause it's just a single issue. I don't need any other stuff from previous campaigns. I don't need anything too crazy. It should be pretty fine just to fulfill it all on time, even if this is all still going on. So yeah, I'm pretty confident. I spoke to Derek today. He's going to have his pencils for the cover in a couple of days. And he's agreed to sell his page on the campaign.
Amazing.
So that's going to go up soon. Like once I've actually got some pencils to show people, then I'll put up so people can buy that original page from him, which is amazing. Apart from that, just a couple of people who I'm still waiting to kind of do their stuff. But I feel pretty confident that it's all going to be finished.
The thing is, as well, is I suppose you're in the world now of having, thankfully, you know, hit your goal very early. You're now having to think of fucking hell, what's going to be the next stretch goal? You know, it's almost like that because it's going so well. You know, you're going to have to start thinking ahead, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, once everyone's heard this show as well, I'm sure get a whole another flurry coming in with your guys.
Hope so.
Approval.
Yeah.
Well, we had one before the show. Me.
I'm just going to go around all the different podcasts just so everyone feels
one at a time.
To back it.
Yeah. Just wait till you get on air and then just accuse them of not having backed
it. We're on to the final stretch goal now because we just hit the Ian Laurie original print stretch goal today. So now everybody will get, depending on whether they're physical or digital backers, a print from Ian, which looks amazing. And the final one that I kind of listed at the beginning was 5K, and that's adding like another 4 pages to the book of design and back matter stuff, because all the guys were doing like portraits of the characters to kind of get used to how to draw them. And I've got all their roughs and kind of mood board type stuff where they were planning the general like feeling of their pages. Some beautiful stuff. So we've got loads of stuff to fill up the whole back of the book with all kinds of special bonus material. So that'll be cool if we can hit that.
Yeah.
And then if we hit that, then yeah, I'm definitely going to have to think of something else. It's going to be difficult after giving away an Ian Laurie print and actual extra pages, and then having Shaky's page added and Gary Erskine's page added. Maybe you guys off air, you can give me any ideas you've got.
Somebody puts top dollar in, you quarantine with them in a house for a week.
I'm still worried about that, plans for free, Jordan. Is this some weird fantasy that you're going to trick me into putting this on?
Mate,
and
it
goes in about 2 minutes and
Tony's
up his bid.
Yeah, that's I have that for free, man, on me. I don't mind. Take that with
me. I'll bear it in mind. We'll see.
Good man.
Although I think for being at MCM, with some of the people that come up to your table, I'd be a bit nervous.
Yeah. Similar are out there.
Well founded.
Yeah.
One question I did have. Obviously, you're based in Spain, but a lot of your books currently are you know, almost aimed at the sort of indie market. Obviously, they're aimed worldwide, but I think predominantly a lot of your readers and stuff probably come from the UK sort of scene. In terms of printing your books, do you get them printed and you have stock with you where you are there, and then you just bring a box over with you, or you deliver from there? How does that work?
I've got a very supportive mother who allows me to keep everything in the spare room at her house. And back when we used to have aeroplanes and flying and stuff like that, it costs about 40 quid return to fly from Granada to Gatwick, which is only about an hour on the train from my house. So I would just literally keep everything in England. I do all the printing with CP UK, with Comic Printing UK. Yeah. And yeah, I just kind of go back and kind of dovetail it with visiting family every kind of 3 months or so.
Nice.
Do everything like that, really. But obviously, it's absolutely screwed me when it's come to this fourth issue. So,
yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, I know. I think people understand, man.
Yeah. They're extraordinary circumstances. And, like, this is the time for understanding from anyone. You know, and considering these things are, let's face it, they're not essentials. They're luxuries, aren't they? You know, if people will wait for the fourth issue. And if anyone gives you shit about it, send them to us. We'll sort them out.
Yeah, I feel right. I got the digital ones all out to people really quickly because the fulfillment date was actually June. But I'd managed to get Clark well ahead. So everything was kind of ready by the time we were finishing up the campaign.
So you delivered that well ahead of schedule then?
Well, that's all right. People have had that. Yeah. They're fine. They'll understand about the physical copy. Yeah. I have to say, I think we obviously launched Atomic Hercules 1, and then we were ready to launch the second issue. And we held back, me and Adam, because we thought, well, I don't know what's going to happen with Kickstarter during the isolation thing. But I have to say, Kickstarter has fucking taken off in the last, like, month. It's gone nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same as me buying all the omnibuses, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
Mm. It was quiet for a bit, wasn't it? I think the first few weeks, people weren't sure. And then I think a couple of people
dipped their toe, and we're like, oh, fucking hell. It's like, and to be fair, I'm currently backing more at the moment than I've ever backed before.
There's definitely less stuff on there currently, because I kind of keep a bit of a look as a statistical kind of thing to be like, oh, how many live comics are there on there in this month or this month? And it's about 80 to 100. It's picking up a bit now, but definitely 80 to 100 down on normal months.
Yeah.
You get 220 on there.
Probably a good time.
I think it is a good time in the... Yeah.
I mean, like, if you put pointless TNA in your comic, any time is a good time for Kickstarter.
What's pointless TNA? I don't understand that concept.
Tony. you know, whereas look for the comics that are out there, like Quarantine, that are worth your attention.
About being a comic, not about being a pair of boobs. As much as I approve of boobs, there's occasionally there's just a pair of boobs, and that's the old thing. Yeah.
It just boggles my mind. It's best not to think about how they get funded so quickly.
Yeah, no, I know. It especially worries me what everyone else in the world is like, though I don't actually. So,
yeah. You do look through some of those projects on there. The ones that are just like the sexy versions of all of the girl characters from the cartoons we used to watch and stuff like that. Anyway, this is like, surely this is just like a kind of Operation Yew Tree tile setup to try and catch out. Weird business, you'd think.
Well, that's the whole story. They start masturbating over anime, and then, you know, where do they go from there?
Yeah. Exactly.
Next thing you know, it's Velma from Scooby-Doo.
The fucking gateway drug, believe me.
Yeah.
And it's always, when you look at them, it's always like they've only got about 25 backers, but they've all backed the, like, £500.
Yeah.
Like, funny.
All you got to do is, like, have it like a commission piece that said, I will draw anything you want.
Oh.
And then.
God.
They black that, and then
I will draw round anything you like.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Do you feel like if you want to kind of go down that route, there's a lot of money to be made? But I feel like, say, if I was going to do that, I'd do it and think this is all right, and then actually get down to nitty gritty drawing it after a while. Be like, why the fuck did I do this?
I mean, in for a penny, in for a pound. Why don't you just go and do porn? What do you do? Yeah. Close up brown eye porn.
Oh. Tony.
What?
Mum's going to want to listen to this, guys.
I mean, she's probably switched off about like an hour ago before she even got to this bit, trust me.
That's why we get the big numbers, the boob talk.
Yeah.
It's quite nice to segregate. Actually, though, I'm pretty sure that Tony made a slightly crude joke in the first 30 seconds.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, pretty sure. Yeah.
I was going to say that you've balanced it out so people can
listen to
the first half.
That's usually a bit late.
Yeah,
just the opening number.
Yeah, I don't even consider it setting the tone now. It just is the tone, and I've just made my peace with it.
You go with it. You love it, baby. Yeah.
We're just wallowing around in the shit like a pig. So this is what it is now. Yeah.
Not like one of the pigs from Frank at Home on the Farm, of course. So which you should definitely check out, and you should definitely check out Quarantine.
That's segueing.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's class.
That's what they call segueing.
Yeah. I'm actually slightly aroused by that segue.
Why, thank you.
Yeah.
But if you haven't checked out this Kickstarter, go and we'll put a link in the show notes, of course. But for those who want to obviously find out more about your work and discover these great books you're putting out, Jordan, where can people find you and the Kickstarter and etc., all of that good jazz?
So on Twitter, I'm Jordan_J_Thomas. On Instagram, I'm @ampersand1988. It's my little Why the Last Man homage. Yeah. On Kickstarter, obviously, if you search Quarantine in comics and scan through the five or whatever that are above it now, because everybody's got Quarantine in the title, you get to the one that's got a nice photo of Gustavo's art on it. And you can follow me on there. So obviously that way you'll always get updates whenever I put a new comic on. And yeah, I mean, you guys have seen the art, like taking out my part as the writer in any of it, like the artists on this book are doing absolutely incredible work. If you've got any interest in art or comics or blobs, then you know, I think you'd be crazy to miss it.
And that sells itself, doesn't it? Go forth, follow, check it out and read it, and thank you very much for joining us, Jordan. This has been awesome.
Wonderful, thank you very much, guys. It's been a pleasure.
And there you have it.
Very good. That was good to hear about. Yes. That's a promising project.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about. Yeah. Good to see the Sprawl Lords involved.
Yeah. We've pledged. We've been lucky enough to see what is coming. And as I said many times during that interview, it looks bloody brilliant. So, Jordan for joining us this week.
Yeah.
So, shout out to him. And speaking of shout outs, what shout outs have we got this week?
Well, I've got a few.
Go on then.
Go for it.
Oh, what's that noise?
Oh, you're getting another one.
That's my phone, sorry.
That's all right. So, first one, thank you to everyone who backed Atomic Hercules.
Hey.
I didn't large it during that interview, but we got about half as many more backers in our second issue, which makes us very cool. So I think, to be fair, because a lot of Americans got hold of it, and so I'm well pleased about that. Thanks to everyone. It's ready. The book is finished. We just got to go to the print, so we're ready to go. Space Warp is another book that is almost finished, that is fast approaching its release date, which we will announce more soon. But if you go to millsverse.com, you'll see that I'm doing a series of interviews with creators. I did one with Ian Ashcroft last week. I did one with Cliff Cumber, which does make me chuckle this week. And there's someone not so far from me here who I'll be doing with next week. So so that's quite fun. Vince is working his nuts off on it, aren't you?
I am indeed, and enjoying it.
There's
some amazing art. I've been privy to some amazing artwork again, and working with everyone involved is just an absolute pleasure. But there may be a little bit of a reveal over the next week. You might see. I'm not going to say anything more because it's not my place. But
we've seen it. It looks amazing.
Yeah,
love it. Yeah.
So stay tuned because
Go on, mate, sorry.
I don't know much about the project because obviously you're professionals, you're treating it like that. Is there any kind of, what's the distribution model going to be? Can you talk about that, or is that still being decided?
I think that's to be announced, but it is sorted out. It's a good one, It will be. You will be able to get your hands on it very easily. Yeah, coming up, and there's a couple of companies involved and different models, a number of different ways, actually, which should be good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm really pleased because I created a character which is possibly going to be part of canon. Which I'm very excited about, which is my little icon now on the Skype. You can see, very exciting.
That's fantastic, that picture. Yeah, I really like that.
Yeah. Next one up is R.I.P. Richard Salla. If anyone knows him, he's did a lot of work with Frantagraphics. I've been a fan of his stuff for a number of years. He does some sort of grotesque-y, sort of funny horror stuff. It's very cool, very stylized. And he died today, or yesterday, I think it was, which is a real shame.
Oh, sucks.
If you can find Super Enigmatics, which is one of my favorite strips by his, look it up. Really good stuff. Yeah, they're my ones. There you go, guys.
Nice.
I'll give a shout out to your podcast, Danny, again.
Oh, thank you, mate. Cheers.
I've downloaded the latest episode, and I'm looking forward to listening to that this week. Jason, I'll go out and run, and then listen to a bit of it, and then listen to some more the day after. And yeah, I love it. It keeps me going.
Mm. Thank you.
And also, John Tucker's Twitch stream.
Yes. Yeah.
It's brilliant. Great.
Yeah.
It's like you can watch John
just now, wasn't he? Wasn't he doing one just a few minutes?
He was. Yeah. Now? Unfortunately, we was recording the episode. He was doing a RoboCop redesign. Mm. Which sounds fantastic. John Tucker and RoboCop, two of my favourite things fusing together. yeah, see if I can get it on a catch-up thing. But he did one, The Unstranglable Man, like a comic.
Yeah,
that was lots of fun. And there's lots of banter going on in the chat with the usual reprobates.
Yeah, yeah. And the one he did of Atomic Hercules is now a postcard. It's one of our stretch goals. So Adam's coloured it, and it looks great. Really good. Yeah, yeah. Good stuff.
Nice. Another shout out or announcement I've got. Mark your calendars. The 6th of the 6th at 6 p.m. Is going to be the release of MI666, the book from myself and Andy Bloor. Yes, it's 6 p.m. on the 6th of June. We were discussing like the release dates, and Andy threw that one at me. He goes, it's a bit strange, isn't it? That's a Saturday. I said, we can do whatever the fuck we want. Let's just...
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So is that when you're going to take orders? You're going to open up orders for physical and digital?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, I believe so. So
you're not kickstarting it, are you? Just putting it straight out?
No, we're putting it straight out. Just me and Andy off our backs, just putting out a...
Nice work, fun, man. Nice
fun
work.
A fun little comic for you all. So
how many pages?
28.
Oh, nice.
Are you printing it then selling it?
Are you interviewing me about this?
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
What was the question?
For info. Are you getting it printed then selling it, or seeing how many orders you get then getting
it
printed?
We're printing it and then selling it. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. The best way to do it, I think.
Yeah. Balls out of the bathtub.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You got a pair of bollocks on you, son. You know how to do it. That's how it works.
So stay tuned to me and Andy's Twitter stream to find out where you'll be able to get it, etc.
Can I order one at 5 p.m. just to be a twat?
I mean, you'll have to come to us direct because the link won't be active. I bet it'll be that day as well. We'll set it up and then all of a sudden my internet will go down or his internet.
You have to change it to MI999 or something.
Yeah. But thank you to everyone who's shown support and is looking forward to the book. And we're looking forward to you seeing it. So Andy's just absolutely smashed it. So yeah. So stay tuned for that. Speaking of comics, we're going to recommend some comics now for you.
Go for it.
We've got a few this week, so they might be short, sharp, like a scattergun, just blasting you all in the face with.
I wonder where we're going. With
love of comics.
Your mind's going to be short and sharp.
Okay.
You've got two, haven't you, Dan?
Yes.
I've got two.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, I'll go in the middle. Tony, you do two. Yeah. You do one each. Then I'll go in the middle. You can do one each. How's that?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Dan, do you want to start us off?
I'll lead off. Yeah. I'll be on the vanguard, as it were.
Hey. Yeah, see what you did there?
Brand awareness. So I've got Moon, published last year by Nicole Bates, who's one of the hosts on the Lakes podcast.
Yeah.
And the story synopsis is, when we fall asleep, our mind tries to sort out our worries and our fears, but what if the worries overcome you? What happens when the moon is full? Follow you meeting your worries and learning about yourself on the way. It's a charming little book that Nicole's put out here. I think it's like all drawn by hand on, I think it's like black paper. White inks on.
Doesn't it change halfway through? Is that right?
There's change as the story, as element, as the, fucking advert on Comic House. Excuse me.
I've had that before.
So I was just going to flip through a few pages, but like it's a tale that kind of like would work well with younger kids who were kind of like maybe experiencing some of the kind of emotional and anxiety issues that the books the book deals with, that to give it a read and hopefully take something positive away from it.
Yeah.
I feel like kind of because it's got like the first steps here that you could take more, keep working on it. There's like the first steps, but you can take this concept further, and it shows a lot of kind of promise and growth, which could be kind of moved into and grown into. So yeah, applause for your first comic. You did a really good job. I'd like to see what else you can come up with.
Yeah, she's doing more stuff at the moment, actually. Yeah. Well, I was up at the Lakes last year, and she was telling me all about the new thing. I don't think I'm allowed to talk about it, but yeah, very exciting. Yeah,
there's some real standout pages. There's one where she sort of the young girl question tackles like her anxiety is kind of manifests itself as some kind of like flowing wolf monster. It's like a full page pinup, and it's a really lovely piece. So nice. Yeah, it's on Comic House, and you can check it out now, which I recommend you do.
Nice.
Nice. My first one is going to be a Kickstarter sort of book that I received probably about a month or so ago, I think. Yeah, it's one that, from creator Derek Donovan, who I don't know if anyone knows his name. He's worked with like Marvel and Image and things like that. And it was a 64-page zombie western book called Trigger Mortis. Fucking love
nice.
That. Love that name. yeah, I obviously, because he's from the States, so I pledged for the digital. And yeah, go through. I read it in one quick sitting. It really sort of moves at quite a pace, this book. It's basically, as it says on the Kickstarter page, it's a thrill ride combining the action and human drama of spaghetti westerns and the tension of horror of zombie films. Both in equal measure, I would say. It's set 1876 on the eve of Colorado gaining statehood. Rancher Sarah McClintock, classic Western name, isn't it, has hired a pair of Pinkertons to protect her family's ranch from the ever-present threat of cattle rustlers. But then there's Westerns, there's a love triangle, and then a zombie plague comes crashing to Earth. It's one of those rocks from space, zombie plagues. You know what I mean?
Yeah, classic one. Yeah.
And soon enough that spreads like wildfire and sort of threatens this whole town. And this is good fun. It was a definite quick read. I have to send you guys the PDF, actually. I'm not sure where you can actually get it from now. I'll have to dig that up and see if I can put it in show notes. As I got the PDF, I'm just going to share it to Tony and Dan, and you'll have to trust me. I did actually post a page on Twitter. It was a double page spread because this was a book that was designed sort of landscape. It's not a standard sort of comic book page. If you turn the comic book on its side, that's how it reads. You know, that sort of style. And it's the artwork is absolutely stunning. It's very clear. It's very reminiscent of sort of artwork from, oh god, Dan, help me out, Invincible.
Right, Otley,
those sort of people that work with Kirkman, you know, like Otley and the like. It's very clean, crisp, very unusual for a sort of a zombie book. Mostly zombie books like have like dirty, grimy sort of artwork normally. This is very clean and it looks stunning, looks beautiful. And like I say, it's very same. One of the things I really enjoyed about this book was certainly the first 30 pages of it, because the 30 pages, there's not really any zombie bits. Yeah, there's a hint of it, you know, you got the meteor crashing to Earth, but the first half of the book is all about the characters, and like, you know, you get to know these people and relationships in between them, and yes, it does play into cliches and tropes, and but in the right kind of way. And then eventually when it all kicks off, it always strikes me that you get really attached to these characters and then in a panel they're gone. Do you know what I mean? It works, I don't know, it feels differently in comics when that happens to films. Because with comics sometimes you could spend ages with a character and in one panel they're gone, and it's not always a massive scene as well. They could just be gone in a small panel. And sometimes to me that feels like a character doesn't necessarily get the send off they deserve in some ways. It's just, it's interesting. Yeah.
More real life, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, we don't
always do it. Yeah. I think it speaks volumes that, you know, if you're thinking about that when a character goes out of the book, it means you've done something right, isn't it, to get people attached to the characters. Because I've read, certainly, normally we're quite tired of zombie books on this show. I've certainly read some where I don't care about anyone in it. Yeah. In Trigger Mortis, I'm a fan of Westerns and horror Westerns.
That's something Kirkman, you speak of Kirkman, that's something Kirkman does, doesn't he? He kills off characters that you are familiar with.
Yeah, yeah.
Kill your darlings kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, and there are certain characters that they're built into it, and I think, oh, they're obviously going to be quite main, and then they're just taking, there's some surprising turns, which you need in this sort of storytelling. No one is safe, obviously. I think as it moves on, there was a couple of things I noticed. I think there was a couple of spelling mistakes I saw.
Right.
But I can't name them off the top of my head. And to be honest, in the grand scheme of things, I'm not someone that's going to be like, this is disgraceful, because I've got a life.
Yeah. The only time I will ever mention that is when people can't spell your. That's the only thing that literally fucking kills me inside.
And I think also, we've all created comics and you printed something and then looked at it and then just thought,
oh yeah, fuck.
No matter like 10 people have proofed it, there will be something that slips. So
I put 2 pages in the fucking same one, but Vanguard Book 3. So we'll fuck up.
It's great, but it does end very quickly though. I did notice that the first sort of 30 pages, like I say, I was really into that. It was almost like I wanted, dare I say, I wanted a 100-page book rather than 64. Not that I mean, that would be a lot of work for them. But it was like characters were taking it left, right, and centre, and it all comes to a head pretty quickly. It does feel very much like a movie, like a classic Saturday Night Rental, really, in that way. It totally plays into that. And but Trigger Mortis is definitely, if you love a bit of schlock and horror and westerns, and a great-looking book. It's a very clean, the artwork's very clean, even to the point where the frames of like the panels and stuff are very crisp. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I did post a large panel, about a week or so ago on Twitter.
I didn't see that. I'll have a look.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I didn't think I was going to say I thoroughly enjoyed a zombie book for quite some time, but this was a sort of welcome bit of schlock and horror.
Yeah, isn't how they do it, isn't it? Let's face it, a lot of the time.
Awesome. Yeah.
So Trigger Mortis, also extra points for that name. So.
Yeah, definitely. This is weird, isn't it? I was thinking about this earlier, because I was going through looking for something to review earlier. Is there a number of pages that put you off reading something dependent on the subject? So, I mean, occasionally I go through and I look and say, oh, it's a new superhero team created, or is a new, like a zombie book. And if it's like 250 pages, I think, nah.
Yeah, if it's pretty,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
if it's pretty hefty, that's why I think a lot of like Kickstarters, one and done, sort of like 40, 60, 80 pages, spot on. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I think we're used to that because we read a lot of European books, we're used to that sort of 48 to 68 page range, aren't we? And we're kind of accepting of it, aren't we? I think at the moment.
Yeah. It's a nice space for pacing as well when you're doing a story, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It depends, like, on the concept of like what the story's about. When if it's fairly bog standard, and you think, "Oh, I don't know what I'm gonna do with this," and then it's 100 pages, you think, "Oh, fuck's sake! I can't see there being a lot in this to kind of explore." We shouldn't really judge comics and books like that. But if it's got an interesting concept, you think, "Oh, fuck, well, where's this gonna go?" And the page count is something to sort of be relished as opposed to find off-putting.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you know what? You know that Guinness the Book of Records.
Yeah.
When like the page count of that is high, but the premise of it is so great, I was just absolutely tearing through that book. And there's others I've opened up and I'm like, oh god, I don't know if I can do this.
You only got to look at that book we talked about last week, the British, you know, UK Comics Guide thing. That was so many pages, but we tore through that, didn't we? Because it's
I've been looking at that every fucking day.
Nice one.
Tony.
I've got one that I'm going to mention and one that I'm going to review. Now, the one I'm going to mention is in a disparaging way. I was looking. I've had trouble finding books to review for the pod. Actually, there's not much on Comixology at the moment, is there? There seems to be this sort of never-ending stream of anime or manga romance books. I don't really understand, so I don't even look at
them. There's been a few I've spotted tucked away. Sometimes you can find
it. Yeah, there's the odd thing, but a lot of it I look at it and I think, oh Christ, not this style again. You know, I've been really looking forward to something. So I saw this book come out from Koyama Press called Stunt by Michael DeForge. Now, have you got a pen on you? Are you holding a pen?
Yeah.
Right, now I'm going to describe the dimensions because the dimensions surprised me. So the it's kind of like a thick bookmark, if you look at that, so on its side, horizontal. Mm-hmm. So it's about a pen and a third length in length. And then the height is about half a pen in height. So that gives you a sort of sense. Yeah. Now it's 40 pages or something. Not brilliant paper, and it's two colours. And it was $15.
Right.
Yeah, I sent you the picture, so didn't I? I
don't know. A bit like those religious pamphlet comics you used to get.
Yeah, it's not much more than a leaflet, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
And it was $15, and I'm like, it's the first time I've ever written a letter of complaint to a comic company for just... and I don't know whether because of the current situation you hear about so many people being sacked or being furloughed or whatever it's going to be, and money can be tight for people. This is piss take, I've got to tell you.
Yeah.
Price-wise, it's ridiculous. Yeah. You know, absolutely ridiculous. Anyway, so first time I've ever written a letter of complaint, and watch the updates on that, see if we get anything back. The book I'm going to actually talk about is we're a fan of Aftershock. We've all mentioned Aftershock books, I think, on here. Yeah. Mine is, the first one is Join the Future, issue one, written by Zach Kaplan, art by Peter Kowalski, colors by Brad Simpson, letters by Hassan Otsemi Alahu, I think is how you say it. It's science fiction premise. Opens on a young, diverse, good-looking cast of uniform helpers in a kind of promotional movie, showing you around what is they describe as the sort of this perfect city, full of freshly grown food, idyllic streets, you know, attentive healthcare. The assistants sort of smile, you know, with these sort of shit-eating smiles, and tell you all about the life you could lead, you know, leisure activities, sports, VR sets in every room, and it's your kind of basic sci-fi setup you get. You know, there's no disease, no hunger, no poverty, no crime in this city. A bit like maybe something like Shivers, the movie Shivers, maybe a little bit like Logan's Run, that sort of thing. And then the story moves out to the mid, what it describes as the Midwest, and there's a family out hunting, and they're dressed in sort of raggedy cowboy clothes, and they've got sort of old school Winchester kind of guns, and they're trying to shoot some birds so they can feed. And one of the girls misses and is attacked by a wolf, and she's lost her asthma pump. So the boy's going, well, why don't we go to the city, you know, and points off to this sort of gleaming city in the distance. And the father, he's a sort of, he says, never compromise and never join. And they go back to the town, which is a town called Franklin, population 288. And they find that there's a car from the city there with the salesman, sort of sci-fi car. They're trying to sell the city to this sort of, the last sort of bastion of, you know, people actually living on their wits and stuff like that. And they're a society who have decried the use of technology, and they don't want to be part of this sort of perfect living thing. And they sort of sense there's something wrong with it. And something then happens. I won't spoil the end of it, but something very violent then happens. There's a female lead. From it looks like the second issue is up for pre-order on the 3rd of June, which I suspect is when they're going back to releasing their books in a sort of normal way. Aftershock, I suspect it would have been sooner, because I think this came out in March, I think. It's an interesting setup. It's probably going to get me back going back for the next one. It balances very neatly, very slickly, a story, exposition, violence, and a cliffhanger. I like the art. I think the art's nice and clean. He did the Peter Kowalski also did. He did Sex, if you remember that book. Was it Chuck Dixon? I got a feeling he did Sex. Yeah. And he did The Witcher, some of the Witcher comic that came out. He did the Nightbreed comic, which I talked about a couple of years ago, which I really liked. Yeah, really good stuff. He's worked all over the place. Boom, Marvel, Dark Horse, Black Mask, all these sort of people. Zach Kaplan did Eclipse, which is another, I think it's an Image book off the top of my head, which is a really nice sort of sci-fi concept one. He's done some Nightwing. He did Port of Earth, which I think Samuel George London talked about when he came on. It's a good book. It does, however, smell of being written somehow by an algorithm to me. It's got everything. Somebody's read a book on how to write stories and applied it to this. Doesn't make it bad,
just makes it a tiny bit forgettable. I think the cliffhanger is interesting enough to get me to go back, but it is kind of a little bit anodyne for me, I suppose. There's no real edge to it, which I always look for in a book. Nothing hugely special about it, but it's well made. It's slickly drawn. The writing is okay. You know, the dialogue works okay. But I think I'll probably go back for Kowalski's art. Really like that. Sort of that, it's got that clean, realistic style to it that I kind of like. And I have to say, I just like Aftershock. They put out good sort of high concept sci-fi books and horror books, which are kind of good. Yeah, so that's my one. It's Join the Future, issue one, and the second issue is out in June. There you go.
Smile. Awesome. Dan.
My next one is Silicon Heart.
Yep.
Which is written by Sam Rhodes and art. Oh, it's Kat Cardi. It's not. It's got a cover artist, but not mentioned the interior artist.
Okay. And,
I think it's the same artist all the way through.
Yeah, throughout. I was just looking for the credits on Comic House, but here we are. It says, January is a bullied teenager who finds solace in the embrace of the synthetic being Ro. Her friends and family aren't ready to accept this, but when January takes a stand against the prejudice of the law, Nora is prepared for what happens next. That might be a bit of spoilers for me, because I've only read the first issue, and I really enjoyed it. It kind of a Mean Girls vibe with a bullied teenage girl at school, and it's set slightly in the future where kind of like robotic beings are now kind of integrating into humanity. And there's some fantastic world building. You get these adverts in the background of posters of like joining like this futuristic army to fight this war. And it foreshadows at the end that the robot chap Ro is going to have to join up at some point. But these two kind of lost individuals, him being alienated because he's a robot and her because she's like the teenage girl that everyone takes the piss out of. Cause she's not quite conventional like the other girls. And they sort of form a relationship together, and that's it starts to sort of blossom in the end of the first issue. I believe the collection on Comic House is the complete story. I think it's either four issues or five.
Okay.
And it really kind of got me in. It's a real kind of warm, engaging story. Even the one issue's kind of got me on board. It's weird. I've not seen a kind of an art style quite like it, but it serves the story so well. It's kind of at times quite cartoony, but I don't know. I think it's really appealing. I think a lot of people would really like this title. And there's nice little cutaway bits, double page spreads, which I sort of really need to get on board and try and do again. But, yeah, it's kind of sketchy but solid. Yeah, it's an enjoyable read. I'd recommend it. It's more of a teenage title. But there's something in there for everyone, I reckon.
Nice.
So cool. Give it a go. Another banger from Comic House.
Nice. And the final one for this week is a very short, sort of punchy, almost Twilight Zone, Tales from the Crypt-like tale that I found. Social media, lots of creators were like, oh, I did this little comic a little while ago. You can download it for free. Oh, yeah, right. Oh, let's see what this is. It looks quite cool. Download it, read it, follow the creator, and look forward to anything they're going to do in the future. That old chestnut. this is a tale called Big White, from a story by Brian Wickman, art by Vlad Legostav, letters by Rachel Deering. It's a sort of post-apocalyptic sort of sci-fi short. When a supply run to the snow-covered ruins of the surface world goes awry, unlucky tow truck driver Caleb comes face-to-face with the horror that lurks in the endless storm. Apparently, this was runner-up for the 2019 Platform Comics Short Comic Contest.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
And this is just... you know when you just see it, like, it's only 14 pages. Front to back, it's... And, you know, it won't take long to read, but immediately you connect with this world. You want to know more about it. It's got a wonderful sting in the tale. Looks gorgeous. Vlad's artwork is very much, you know, when you discover like a Trakanov, and you think, right, okay, here's someone I'm going to have to see what else they've done. I'd imagine this artist is probably done loads of great stuff, or is going to take off, because it's built up a very realistic sort of post-apocalyptic world. But it is The big white is it's snow. Everything's covered in snow. Basically, it started snowing and it did not stop. So it's that sort of world, which immediately lends itself to some lovely visuals. But that's not to say it doesn't waste any sort of. There's not like a full with a 14-page short story. You can't really sort of waste time on just a one sort of page sort of like landscape setting up the world.
No, it's got to fucking move, hasn't it?
It has to move. It does have a splash page in it, and the splash page does exactly what it has to do, and it's pretty spectacular. It's a great little short horror tale. I highly recommend you check it out. If you can follow the creator Brian at BM Wickman on Twitter. If you go to his website brianwickman.com, on his comics, there's a store where like people in the US can buy like print copies of this. I think he did a low print run, but if you just go to the comics tab, the free download is available directly from the website. So it's the story is just available, so you can just read it now. One of the reasons I'm excited about finding out more from Brian as well, because he's we were talking about this just before the show started, but we're starting interested in a publisher called Scout Comics, who are starting to do some good stuff. And Brian has a comic coming out with them soon called Grit. As he puts it, it's a goofy pulp sword and sorcery adventure that follows an aging monster hunter on his path to remedy the unintended consequences of his brutal style of problem solving. And he says it's The Witcher by way of Southern Bastards. So take my money, basically. And he's basically, his pinned tweet is the first three covers of Grit, and it looks right in our wheelhouse, properly, you know. And I think from the looks of it, if you like things like Rumble and stuff like that as well.
Okay.
It could be like a bit of everything. So, follow the creator. Looking forward to finding out more from them. But all that aside, Big White is just a great little sort of sci-fi horror tale with character as well. In that, as well as a huge setup, they get some real human character in there, which is what you need with your horror.
Yeah, definitely.
So, there you go. Another show full of comic links that I need to set up as I'm editing the show.
It's easy, that editing, Lark, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. How are you getting on with it, Tony?
Well, I don't do any.
Yeah. I try not to, but inevitably I have to. But we hope you enjoyed this week's show, folks. And thank you again to Jordan for joining us and talking about his great
Cheers,
work.
Jordan.
We had a lot of fun, and there's a lot of books that everyone's talked about this week that I've written down on my wish list. So
there you go.
Nice.
So we hope you enjoyed it. Let us know what you thought of the show. If you want, is there any topics you want us to discuss at the moment? In this trying time, what's your favorite flavor of tea to try? No, we want to talk about comics.
I think we should do another cover breakdown.
That was a good one. Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah,
love the covers, don't you, Dan? You love talking covers.
You're right. Those covers we picked last time, I thought, where are we going to go with this? But we absolutely just dissected them to pieces.
Yeah, it was really worth it.
Maybe we choose a genre,
you know, like a horror comics
Don't tease the genre month. God, do you remember those days?
Oh yeah, remember that?
Yeah. Maybe we'll do that again.
We've got to do another craft month as well. That was really good. Really like that. Yeah, maybe towards the end of the year or something again.
I wonder what you meant then. Craft month? What you mean? Are we going to be like knitting?
Pottery.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. Sticking seashells to boxes.
We've all just said a specialism.
Is cottaging a thing as well? Is that
is that when you make cottage cheese?
Art form.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you do make cottage cheese. Oh no!
Did you just throw up and want to complain about it? You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if there's any events, if you've got any comics releasing soon, or you know, comic initiatives you want us to know about, email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com and we'll shout about them on the show. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod. We're lining up a great batch of new guests for forthcoming weeks.
Exciting ones coming up.
We'll be talking about all kinds as well, so Yeah. All comics, great and small. That's what we should have called this show, isn't it? We could have.
I mostly go with everything you say, but I'm not going to go with that.
No, yeah. No. I mean, 253 weeks, and I'm still not sick of the word awesome.
No, I still use it.
It's my favourite word. Yeah. So Twitter at The Awesome Pod, follow us there. If you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast and follow the community group Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook, where there's the latest announcements, there's art threads, there's community talk, but there's no hard selling. It's just people that love comics that want to talk about comics. And, check it out, because that's great. Thank you whether you listen to us on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave a review. I don't think we've had a review in a while, have we?
Not for ages. Yeah.
Do you think we're podcast furniture now? Like we're there, but people don't sort of think about us on a daily basis.
We don't get a regular kiss and a cuddle, do we? No, we're just taking advantage of now.
Yeah.
We don't even get a reach around.
Yeah. Unbelievable. What?
No, I think our listeners quite like us.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah,
and we love them. Whether they listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podnose. Hey. What other networks are we on, Tony?
We're actually on Pod. Oh, Barnaby, let's bring down the government by tweeting podcast.
It's a pretty popular podcast at the moment.
You're right, Tony.
Yeah. But we're not about bringing down anything on the show. We're all about bringing up the mood. So
a pants. Bring them down.
You should always keep them on, Dan.
I love it when Dan says things like that. It just makes my day.
Why are you always bringing down your pants?
He's always doing it.
I know.
It's hard not to on this show.
Yeah, people insist.
Yeah.
Thank God it's not a fucking video show. We did that once, never again. anyway.
You have bad hair.
I tell you, we could do the video show when we do if we do another cover one. That's ideal for that. Because then people could see what we're fucking doing.
We can screen share the covers as we're talking. So we don't even have to be on video.
That's wonderful. And then people listen to it on an audio medium and just think, what the fuck are they talking about? Jesus Christ.
See, this is why Vince is in charge of that, to sort of say, no, that's a stupid idea.
He spent the last 5 years saying that, to be fair. When's our fifth anniversary? Is it start of July or is it end of June? I can't remember when is our fifth anniversary, isn't it?
I think so. End of July. God, fifth anniversary. What are you getting me?
What is the fifth anniversary? Somebody should tell us. Is it wood or something? I've got wood.
Wood. We're all going to get wood on our anniversary.
That's a month early when we're at Blackpool.
It's probably you two will be alone on a Big Dipper. That's what you'll be.
What about Great Yarmouth? That's all right, isn't it?
What about where people can find us on Twitter, etc.? Tony.
EZOHYZ. Never on anything.bigcartel.com. You can buy my comics. Please do buy something. Nobody ever buys anything.
The man's a brand now, so you need to support that brand.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Expensive being a brand.
It is. Yeah. You like the new Nike.
Tony's almost putting out a daily podcast. I'm in awe.
Yeah.
16 out in a month and a week, I think it is. So that's not too bad. But it's slowing down soon. I think I over-egged it a bit. Yeah.
No, it's all good.
That's his way of saying he's fucking exhausted.
Yeah. Well, next one's Dan. We're bringing the guns.
Yeah.
The guns.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, once you've done that, you don't need to do anything else. Yeah. Yeah, just close it down.
That's the cherry on the top of the cake.
Yeah. that's what we call him. But where can they find you online,
you
Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard issue 18 at vanguardcomic.com, which will be updating with proper pages this week.
Yes.
I'd really love it if you put issues out. I would buy them again. Yeah. I would really love that. I know it's just kind of you've got the trades out already and you're online, but I'd love to see your books in issues. Do you know what I mean?
I might just do it as a kind of thing to say, look, I'm going to fucking make this one into an issue and just put it out.
Yeah, a little promo.
Just a single issue. Yeah.
Maybe issue 20 or something like that.
Just take it on the chin.
That's
what this one's. There's a lot of turns and twists and turns in this one, so it might be a good one.
Oh, there's
to put
a surprise.
Out.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, you don't need to say that, Dan. That happens every fucking page of your webcomic.
Yeah. There's this new armor design on the Pendragon character. I love drawing it. going to have to try not to work it into every single panel that he's in.
True. or kill him. You never know with Dan Butcher.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah,
you're the Kirkman of indie comics.
Yeah,
he's not going to die yet.
Well, maybe he's throwing us for a loop, listeners. You never know with Dan Butcher.
I didn't say yeah.
He's playing games. He's playing games with emotions.
Mind games.
Yeah, he does play games with our hearts.
Yes.
But if you want to find me online on the socials, then at Jester Diablo on Twitter and Instagram, and you can follow my daily comic Black on Instagram at Black the Comic. That is BLAK the Comic.
Are you doing like a daily thing, but you're also doing like a little collection of daily ones? I see you put about 3 or 4 out once, didn't you? As well,
that was purely on Black's official Instagram. It's just a page a day. I literally just posted on my personal Instagram because I thought, maybe some people who follow just my Instagram aren't aware of this, so I'll just put a shout out about it. I didn't really want to over sort of do the hype train. But yeah, so hopefully, you know, we'll get some more people checking it out, and there's some crazy
stuff.
Shit,
I'm really enjoying it, man. It's nice, nice, fun experiment. It's abstract, but it's I'm really enjoying it, man. I really like that sort of thing.
Good. And it gets fucking crazy. So, thank you for listening. Speaking of crazy, thank you for listening to this show. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you to our guest, Jordan, who was an absolute legend. And from Dan, Tony, and myself, go forth, stay safe, stay healthy, stay sane, look after yourselves. Bit of common sense and comics. That's all we need in the world. So have a great week. And as always, from everyone,
stay awesome.
Stay awesome. And what?
Well done. I thought, do you know what? If I was going to lead into that, you'd just jump all over it. Yeah. So I thought I'd let you do it yourselves.
But
sometimes I just give you the rope and then let you hang yourselves. Have a lovely week, everyone. See ya.
Love you, bye.
See ya.